On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Sue Bartholomew. You're on the Commons, and joining us on the Commons today, we have Don Shellhart. Don's an old friend and has been sort of absent for a while, a little bit like me, but we're both back like the phoenix rising out of the ashes. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. You're getting busy and you've got some exciting news for us, so I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to, what you're doing, and what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay, well, Hugh, before I get into the subject matter, as I told you, I'm aware that this is a global connection, and so I'd like to give a couple of shout-outs internationally. First, I'd like to say hello to my longtime friend Karen Gavich in London, and beyond that, I'd like to give a special shout to the people of East Asia. I recently completed a master's degree in cross-cultural politics that included several courses in East Asian studies. So hello to you in Taiwan, China, Japan, and both Koreas. I hope you all stay at peace with each other.
Fairfax Radio is far-reaching. I hear from people around the world, and I'm excited to be able to explain to everyone what we're doing. We have a lot of time. We've got the luxury of time on this show, so we're able to work with, we're able to just get into the details. And that's what we're going to do today, right, Don?
Yes. Okay, well, the exciting news that you referenced is that Congress has passed legislation which has ordered the Federal Communications Commission, in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, to conduct a study of whether HOA antenna restrictions and landlord tenant restrictions, for that matter, are getting in the way of national security by impeding amateur radio antennas. Those antennas, if allowed, could be used for emergency communications. And therefore, Congress wants a report on whether it should get involved in regulating the regulators and the HOAs. The FCC has heeded this congressional mandate and opened up written comments on, or invited written comments on the study. And they basically want to know whether homeowners and association and landlord bans on ham antennas are in fact impeding emergency communications, and if so, what should be done about it. So that's being checked by the FCC, but also in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, both agencies are going to be getting involved.
Wow, right, both agencies, Don?
Hold on, I'm having trouble hearing your question, Sue.
I said both agencies are getting involved?
Yes, well, the FCC, the statute says that the FCC is supposed to take the lead on the study, but act in tandem with Department of Homeland Security. And we know Homeland Security is going to be playing a role because the original legislation, as it came out of committee in both the House and the Senate, gave the lead to the Department of Homeland Security. And somewhere during the negotiations between the House and the Senate in the conference report, that was changed to give the lead to the FCC with the Department of Homeland Security in a secondary role. Now, I don't know why that change was made. Maybe they wanted an agency a little more civilian in orientation to be in charge. But it's quite clear that the sponsors of the bill wanted some kind of active role for the Department of Homeland Security. So they're going to be reading the comments. I'm sure they're going to have a say in what is presented to Congress. But the FCC is doing the front work.
And Don, let me ask you something. There has been, over the years, I've heard from a lot of your ham radio operators who live in HOAs, and they have not been allowed to have the antennas, I guess. That's the restriction in an HOA, isn't it? It's the antenna.
Yeah, well, most HOAs prohibit them, and virtually all landlords.
Landlords now, as well in non-HOAs?
Yeah, well, see, what the statute says, I know you're focused in all on HOAs, and pretty much everybody commenting in this docket is focused in on HOAs, but the actual study is, quote-unquote, private land use restrictions. So basically, any bans on ham antennas that result from what you might call market action, from, you know, private sector action, are within the scope of this study. So I'm sure it's mainly going to be about HOAs, but they are also taking a look at landlords. They, you know, and that makes sense because most of the population of our biggest cities is living in apartments, and they can't have any antennas because of the landlords. So it's all part of the same problem. But the primary focus is on HOAs, and that's where the first regulations will come out. But they'll get to the landlords eventually. I do want to say that there are some differences of opinion on what kind of regulation should be established to override the HOAs. Some hams believe that antennas should be totally unrestricted, or at least allowed to go very high, 65 feet or higher. And the organization that I started up, Hams for Action, takes a little different tack. We're not proposing that antennas should be unregulated. We don't think that's politically viable. I think that would start a lot of fights within the HOAs. We're asking instead for reasonable regulation. So, for example, our established position, although it's under review now, is that HOA should be able to limit ham antennas to 20 feet, the higher of 20 feet or 3 feet above the roof line. So that's kind of a bow to the aesthetic concerns that a lot of the HOAs have, sort of compromise ground.
Let me interrupt you here for just a second, Don. When I first got involved in all of this, the antennas were very, very high. But I understand with technology and the advances that have been made across the board in communications. I mean, we were talking earlier about all of the communication things that we have, the abilities. And I understand that antennas have become smaller. Some people have been able to hide them in patio umbrellas, for instance, or up drain pipes, alongside of drain pipes. So they're not as obtrusive or intrusive as one would think.
Yeah, it also partly depends on, you know, how fancy the ham wants to get. There are antennas, and this is what we were proposing for the apartments, for the flat-out apartments, you just put on your outside window, and they're like 3 feet high. They're not nearly as good as a 65-foot antenna. They don't pick up as much. They don't transmit as clearly. You know, there are various technical drawbacks. But in a pinch, they'll work, and that's probably the biggest antenna you could possibly get politically in a department. So, a ham can take a 3-foot antenna and do something with it, even though he or she might rather have a 65-foot antenna. I keep coming back to 65 feet because we have some agents in our organization who say, you know, well, if you look at this formula here, it shows that the optimal altitude for reception is 65 feet, and it, you know, it's pretty much or more. So that, you know, that's pretty much cut and dry scientifically. But this is not just a technical equation, it's a political equation. And, you know, we're trying to find something that won't drive the neighbors crazy, but will still get the job done. And so we're looking for single-family homes and townhomes at 20 feet, 30 feet, 35 feet, something like that. But there are hands that will just say, well, you know, we are talking about emergencies here, and in an emergency, what you really want is a 65-foot antenna that transmits and receives clear as a bell and can, you know, get news from China. It's a debate. It's technology versus politics.
Oh, boy, the dirty word again, politics, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I sort of make my sort of living in politics, so I, you know, I don't want to put it down too badly, but
I can do it.
I
can do it.
I'd like to think I'm not a typical politician. I try to be as idealistic as I can get away with. I try to push things as far as I can, but I also try to recognize when something just isn't going to fly politically. And on this issue and on others, you know, there are occasions when I push as far as I can, and I've gotten everything I could get for a good cause, and then 10 years later, the situation has changed, and I'm able to go back for more.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, but, you know, there's politics and there's politics and there's politicians and there's policies and, you know, sometimes I just think we get so wrapped up in nonsense that it just gets ridiculous. I mean, even all of this nonsense about, oh, well, you know, you've got this antenna and we can see, even though it's hidden, you've got it and it's against the rules and you got to get rid of it. You know, there's no real reason for that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, there's some HOAs allow flagpole antennas. You can find these on the market. You put the ham antenna right inside a flagpole. And
but the flagpoles aren't allowed in HOAs, Don.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Now, I mean, you know, from the standpoint of the observer, yes, if you look at a flagpole antenna and you know what you're looking for and you look very closely, you can tell it's not a regular flagpole. But someone just walking down the street, it looks like a flagpole. So the problem there is, well, you know, they won't even allow very well-disguised antennas. And as you say, they won't allow flagpoles at all. And there are other things. There are antennas that can be disguised as trees. Now, the disguise isn't quite as good as the flagpole antenna, but they have these little holes in them, and you stick tree branches in some, and, you know.
Are you kidding?
If you don't look too closely, you might think it's a tree. Me, I'd rather have the flagpole, but, you know, the point is that the antennas can be a lot smaller than most people think. The hams may prefer them taller, but they can be made very small. And they can also be disguised, if not completely, at least to a considerable extent. And, you know, I really don't understand, well, I haven't understood from the beginning, why even a disguised antenna or a 3-foot antenna attached to a window is unacceptable to an HOA. You know, I can see why they had a problem with the 65-footer, but why do they have problems with a 20-footer disguised as a flagpole? I don't know.
Because rules is rules and rules is rules, and we've got to make the attorneys wealthy, and they need to have something to litigate.
Well, I can tell you a little story about our dealings with the HOAs through the Community Associations Institute.
You didn't. Tell me you didn't try it.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, let me put this in historical context for a minute. I started up Hams for Action in 2006 as a successor organization to something called the National Antenna Consortium. I don't know whether you can remember that far back, but I became vice president for government relations at the National Antenna Consortium, I think in 2003 or 2004. And the organization was focused on antennas in general, but I did kind of develop a special focus on ham antennas in HOAs, on the subject of HOAs. Anyway, that organization ran out of money toward the end of 2004, 2005, somewhere in there. And I waited a year or so, and then I started up Hams for Action as a successor organization, just focused in on the ham antennas. We operated Hams for Action for about 2 years, and the first thing we tried was putting in another petition for rulemaking to the FCC. A couple of times people had petitioned the FCC saying, please regulate, or please allow antennas to operate freely in HOAs. So we tried the new tack of saying, we're not asking for total antenna deregulation, we're asking for reasonable regulation of antennas, like, you know, single-family antennas with a 20, 30, 35-foot limit, that kind of thing. And we thought that might make a difference. And we put in, you know, very detailed proposals, and we said, you know, the antennas should have to keep the antennas at least every 2 years, and they should have to keep them in good repair and not let them rust, and, you know, all this kind of stuff designed to try to make it more marketable to the HOAs. But the FCC turned us down anyway, and they basically said they said that they didn't want to get involved in regulating private land use arrangements. They said, you know, these are freely contracted arrangements.
That's so the biggest lie on earth, but yeah, go on.
Yes, oh boy, is that a hulk of... Never mind, I won't say what I'm thinking.
that's a fallacy, and anybody listening in, there's nothing free about it. With the mandates, you have no options and no choices. So
we wrote back as HFA to, you know, we sort of appealed the denial of our petition. We wrote back with what they call a petition for reconsideration, which means please take another look at this based on arguments X, Y, and Z. So we filed that, and we said basically, as we said before, actually in the main form, but we reminded them that, you know, these are essentially uniform business practices in a lot of the metropolitan areas, that the banks require the real estate developers to have to arrange for HOAs, and the real estate developers just, you know, don't give the consumer any choice. So we reminded them that again, and we also said at least some parts of the country, this is no longer a purely private sector activity. In Northern Virginia, as you know, Fairfax County requires developers by law to put in HOAs.
The mandates are across the board, Don, and
yeah,
whether they're actually written out in certain parts of the country or not, they have the de facto mandates, because no developer will be allowed or get the permits to construct anything if there is no HOA to take care of it. I mean, this is free money for local municipalities, and we can't overlook that, and we can't forget that. This is free money, and the reason that...
Anyway, we did point out that in a few cases, Colorado is another one, we knew cases where government stands behind the HOAs, not
absolutely
the private sector. But anyway, they completely ignored our petition for reconsideration. They just denied it without an explanation, which probably means that quote-unquote politics was involved. They also put in their rejection that they would be happy to regulate antennas if Congress gave them a green light. Essentially, they said, we really don't want to take on the political ticket of trying to regulate private land use arrangements unless Congress tells us to do it. So we took that as kind of an invitation to go knock on Congress's door. So that was the next thing we tried. The basic problem is that we could raise enough money to to appeal to the FCC, but once you get into lobbying Congress, it's an entirely different ballpark. And, you know, even if I'm working for nothing or for very low pay, there are still all these other costs that have nothing to do with the price of my labor. I have to travel back and forth to Washington. And, you know, for example, to lobby Congress. If I move to the Washington area to be closer to Congress, then I have to raise my rate considerably because your housing is like triple what the housing is here in Central Connecticut. So, you know, just having to make regular visits to Washington or having to be based in Washington is an expensive proposition. And then you got to wine and dine the senator's staffs, and, you know, you've got to pay for all this photocopying of documents and everything. Well, it adds up very quickly. You don't have to do that with the FCC. So essentially, we considered lobbying Congress, but we flat out couldn't afford it. And we couldn't get enough people to donate enough money to do it. And, you know, so we didn't even start. But, you know, with a different financial picture, we could have done it. So we gave up on that, and then we thought, well, let's try talking to the other side directly. And that's when we contacted the Community Associations Institute.
And that's when I started laughing really hard.
Well, I don't know what your experience has been, but they were very cordial to us.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yes, quite. And I'll even give them a pat on the back by name. Andrew Fortin and Janice Walls. Those are two people with whom I dealt. And they said, essentially, hey, you know, it's no skin off our back. If you can convince the HOAs that, you know, that we represent to allow antennas in their communities, that's fine. If you can persuade them to support uniform standards through regulations or legislation, that's fine. But right now we're under orders to oppose all of that. And, you know, and basically, you know, we're locked in by that mandate. And I can understand that. I've worked for trade associations. They did give us a platform. They let us write two articles that were published in the newsletter and sent out to HOAs and said, you know, look, this is the kind of payoff you can get in an emergency if you allow ham antennas. And again, we're not asking for 65 feet. We're asking for 20, 30, 35 feet. And, you know, and so on. And so we sent out those articles and in the CAI newsletter, and they didn't censor us. They didn't try to block us anyway. You know, we never got any response. It was almost like they were saying to us, you try to talk to our members. You try your hand out and you see if you can change their mind. Now, I don't know whether this was a strategy to just appease us or not. Maybe it was. But they honestly did give us a very fair shot at talking to the individual HOAs. And therefore,
They gave you the opportunity to put this information, to publish this information in their newsletter, in their magazine, Common Ground, right? Okay. Now, what happens when people get Common Ground, and who gets Common Ground?
Well, according to the CAI staff, it's basically the executives of the HOAs and some of the lawyers who represent HOAs.
Okay. In terms of their membership, they made a huge change. They used to. Let me tell you something so that we don't get this lost. They made a huge change in terms of their membership. Before, an association could become a member, so associations were members. Then they changed that, and they said, no, it's the individual who has to be a member. Now, this is a kind of expensive. Some associations have bought membership, but often it's through the management company, and the managers and the lawyers get these articles. They're not passing this on to the associations. They're not passing this on to the homeowners who are, you know, the homeowners are totally excluded out of all of this. So,
well,
yeah,
I knew we weren't reaching the homeowners, but I was told we were reaching the HOA executives.
Maybe a few, but not all of them.
Okay. Well, this was back in 2008, or 2007, 2008, that we had these communications. And I don't know whether the changes you mentioned occurred before 2008 or not. If they've occurred after 2008, then what I told you is out of date. But in any event, I think if somebody comes and says, why don't you talk to the HOAs and try to work out a compromise, we can honestly say we did. You know, we really tried to deal with them, you know, in a constructive, respectful way. And, you know, the attitude of at least the CAI people was very courteous. But the bottom line is nothing at all happened. So, you know, negotiation between, I think we can pretty much consider it proven that negotiation between the HOA homeowners and the HOAs on this issue is not going to lead very far in most cases.
Oh, no, because it's not going to reach the HOAs. It's going to get, I mean, you were bamboozled. It was like, oh, yeah, well, we're just really nice people, and we're going to let you put this in, and we're going to be fair-minded. And the fact is that you'd be better off starting a blog, and you can do it, you know, you can do it for free, and just put something catchy, HOAs, and just put it out there. You'll have more luck reaching the actual associations that way than you will through Common Ground.
I may just do that. I'm going to be starting up a personal commercial website in the next few months, advertising my services as a lawyer, and I'm planning to include an HOA section in that.
Cool. Let me know about it.
Yeah, well, it hasn't happened yet, but one thing I have noticed, and I've just gotten sucked into this a couple of times, is people who have had problems with HOAs have sought my help as a lawyer, and it's not really my specialty, but I've gotten involved a few times, basically because they couldn't find any other lawyer who would be serious about that, at least in Virginia. These were all Virginia cases. People had gone to various lawyers and been turned down as clients, and the impression that at least the people I dealt with got was that the lawyers in private practice felt they had a shot at making a lot more money representing HOAs than they could make representing HOA homeowners, and therefore they didn't want to alienate future HOA clients by taking on an adversary of HOAs. Now that's the impression people got. Reading between the lines, I don't think anybody actually said that, but that was the impression they got. And so, you know, I've been thinking lately that, you know, maybe there's a niche market here. I don't care if I never have an HOA as a client. I don't think I'd want an HOA as a client. So with no skin off my back if they get angry at me. Anyway, I didn't mean to go on about that.
Yeah, no, we've covered the lack of attorneys representing homeowners. We have a couple now, and we've had some cases in Fairfax County where the homeowners have won. There are a few of them, very few attorneys, but you're right. Trying to find an attorney who will take the homeowner's case is very, very difficult. I hear from attorneys. They call me up and they say, I wouldn't take this except that this is a client and has been a client for a long time. And now they're having problems with their HOAs, and I really cannot turn them down on this, but I don't know what I'm doing. And, of course, I'm not an attorney, so I can't give them legal advice. But, I mean, that is a problem. It's a huge issue.
Well, I would say, as an attorney, that if you can resolve a conflict without involving an attorney, you should. It'll save a lot of money. It'll probably save a lot of aggravation. But there are occasions when the other side just won't budge, and you really need to bring in some guns.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more on that.
Before I forget, I want to mention the written comments I'm trying to acquire signatories for. Boy, that was grammatically a lousy sentence. There's this study at the SEC, as I said, and members of the public are invited to make comments up until around May 31st. I say up until around because it's unusually vague at the moment exactly when they're closing off the comment period, but it looks like they're going to be open to comments in the end of the month. What we could really use at this point are comments from people who aren't hands, don't have a dog in this fight in that respect, but still want the protection of amateur radio operations in their neighborhood. And I think you've mentioned this in your promotional materials, I'm not sure, but I wrote up a brief statement which I'd like to read aloud, and I'd like to invite anybody who's listening who supports the statement to contact me at my email address. And I said you're going to post my email address on your website for the next.
I'm going to include it in the promo, which has not been written yet. We are pre-recording the show. Don, if you will please send me the link where people can go to leave a message, please do so. I will include that as well.
Okay. Well, it's just I'm just going to give you my personal email because I don't have a website at the moment.
No, no, but the FCC website where the comments are being taken.
Oh, okay.
So if you'll just mail it to me, send it to me.
What I had in mind was a set of comments that would have like 50 signatories or whatever standard. People can file their own comments. It's just a little bit more complicated than sort of signing a joint statement. But I can tell people how to file their own comments by going to the FCC website. You know, I can. It's sort of step by step. You go www.
Okay. All right. We won't go into it now because nobody's going to be writing it down. But you're telling. Hold on, Don. Don, just a second.
Also, I'd like to read this statement. Anybody who can accept the statement and just wants to sign it can send me an email.
Okay.
I'll need their name and their snail mail address. If they want to put in other contact information, that's fine. But all that I really need is all the FCC requires is the name and the snail mail address. So let me just briefly read the statement, and if somebody thinks they might want to sign it, then they can read your promotional materials. And on your website, they can either find my email address or they can find directions to filing their own statements at the FCC.
Okay.
This is the sort of form letter or form statement that I prepared for people who just want to sign on and not go through all the rest of the work. Quote, "We are not amateur radio operators ourselves, but we would like to see all neighborhoods enjoy the kind of emergency communications protection that ham radio operators can provide. Therefore, we strongly advocate vigorous and well-defined federal government action in all American communities to override the total prohibition of ham antennas by homeowners associations and landlords. We do not propose deregulation of ham antennas, but rather reasonable regulation of ham antennas. Mandatory federal standards for reasonable regulation of ham antennas should replace the current practice in many, many neighborhoods of not allowing any kind of ham antenna at all." That's the whole statement. So if you think you might want to sign that, you know, check Shoe's website. And if you'd like to write your own statement and follow the FCC, you know, we'll have directions there walking you through how to do an FCC filing yourself.
Define reasonable, Don.
Okay.
You know, this is...
Well, basically, that's what we did in our petition for rulemaking. We defined reasonable as, and there's more to this, I should give you the, I'll send you in writing the, I'll try to send you either the formal place to find the, our past petition on the FCC website or a direct link to the FCC website. But anyway, we spelled out some of what we what we had in mind by reasonable. Again, that we proposed that single families, homes, and townhomes in HOA neighborhoods should allow antenna heights of at least 20 feet or 3 feet above the roof line, whichever is higher. We proposed that landlords should be required to allow at least a 3 foot antenna in apartments. We also put in various things about maintenance and liability. If it's an outside antenna, it has to be painted. It has to be kept rust-free. It can't be allowed to become an eyesore. The HOA or the landlord can require it to blend in with the physical background. Things like that we considered reasonable. Also, in the case of landlords or others where the affected hand may not own the property, they would still be responsible for liability if putting in the antenna causes any damage. So that was the kind of thing we had in mind. It's not so much an infallible proposal, but it's the starting point for discussion.
Okay, the reason I asked you to do that is because reasonable is such an ambiguous, it's one of the words that's thrown out all over the place. And what's reasonable to you is not reasonable to me. And if CAI is getting involved, the only reasonable rule that will come along is that you cannot have it. That's why I asked you to define reasonable.
Yeah, we got into all these specifics. In fact, one of the problems that my group had with legislation that the American Radio Relay League was backing for a while, was that the legislation required, quote-unquote, reasonable accommodation of ham antennas by HOAs. No attempt to define reasonable in there at all. And I remember looking at this, putting on my lawyer hat and saying, oh, some lawyers are going to get rich over that language.
Yeah, exactly.
Years and years of litigation.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, we have cases where people have spent $40,000, $50,000 just litigating ham and antenna issues, even in cases where there's no formal prohibition on antennas in the CC&R. The HOA, we have cases where the HOA would still go ahead and try to ban them without the CC&R authority, and in order to save an antenna, some ham would spend $50,000. But, most hams don't have $50,000. So anyway, in this case, we stopped for something like that. So that's why when we made our proposal, we do use the language reasonable because we don't want our statement to be a mouthful of words, but we go on to say our idea of reasonable is 20 to 35 foot ceiling on single family home and townhome and tower antennas, a 3 foot ceiling on apartments, maintenance requirements, and so on. We want to make very clear that we are not proposing the wide open spaces here in terms of regulation. That we want the HOAs to be able to keep some kind of restraint on what people can do with their antennas. But the current policy is not reasonable regulation. It's outright prohibition. And that's really crazy. You were asking, we were talking earlier off the air about Hurricane Katrina and 9/11 and so on, and there are there are a lot of stories out there where everybody was down except the hams. In Katrina, at one point, President Bush wanted to talk to the mayor of the city of New Orleans, and he couldn't get through. Even the military communications at the local Air Force bases in the Gulf area were down. So the President of the United States can't get through to the mayor of New Orleans. What does he do? He calls a ham in Northern Virginia, or his staff calls a ham in Northern Virginia, who patches him through to a ham in New Orleans, who patches him through to the mayor of the city. And, that really goes to show how extreme a communications blackout can happen in the real world. And if you're in Hurricane Katrina and you haven't had anything to eat for 3 days, you really want someone to tell the authorities where you are and what you need. You know, so I'll say, we discussed this earlier, and I know you don't want to get into it in much detail, but, I mean, it's possible that disasters worse than Hurricane Katrina could happen in the foreseeable future. I'm particularly thinking about nuclear terrorism. But there are, you know, there are other scenarios you could run. And, you know, the ability to communicate is essential. The hands can work both ways. They can transmit information to the emergency authorities. You know, this road here is impassable. This community here, it doesn't have its water supply working, whatever. They can send out information to the authorities, and they can receive information from the authorities. You know, hey, guys, you should know there's a fallout cloud headed directly your way, telling your neighbors to get underground. You know, things like that. And in the kind of situation we're talking about, it may be hands or nothing. I had a conversation, remember, one time with my younger niece. And I was sitting on the computer working on this hands radio stuff, and she said, "Uncle Don, why are you working so hard?" And I said to her, "Jill, I'm trying to save lives." And that's really how I see it. I mean, you know, maybe that sounds bombastic, but I think people will survive in future emergencies. If there are more people will survive in future emergencies, if there are more hands on the air than less. And under current conditions where in almost half the neighborhoods of America, you can't even put up an antenna, we are choking off the supply of future hands. Right now the average hand is something like 55 years old. I'm not sure that's the exact age, but it's within a couple of years of that. Well, you know, who's going to replace these guys as we move into the second half of the 20th century? I mean, we're not going to be here forever, and we are not recruiting young hams at nearly the rate we should be to replace the hams who are on the air now. And the reason for that, primarily, is that you have all these young people growing up in neighborhoods where they can't learn ham radio because their parents can't put up an antenna.
Don, we're kind of running short on time, believe it or not. There's so much to talk about. But in terms of ham radios, I have a personal experience. It's not a life or death situation, but it's a very personal experience. Back in the 70s, during the end of the Vietnam War, my husband was in the Air Force, and he was stationed in Thailand. And of course, I was a young bride who just come over from England, had a baby. I was stuck in upstate New York. And the only time that I was able to talk to him was when he was patched from Thailand, Korat, Thailand, to Arizona, where Barry Goldwater had some ham radio stations set up. And they would patch the call through so that the only call we had to pay for was a U.S. call. In those days, calling was super, super expensive. So I think we talked once or twice the whole time, and it was because of the ham radio operators that we were able to do that. So that's a place in my heart that I have for ham radio operators. Also, I was here during 911. Everything was down. Phone lines were down. Cell phones were down. And although, you know, it was really hard to communicate even locally, and I thank God for ham operators who were able to just keep in touch and keep the word going, keep the word out there. So there is a real need to keep all of our lines of communication open, including ham radios. And you know what, HOA, get out of the way. Stop impeding progress.
I think it's going to make a lot of difference if we can get, as with these written comments I've referenced here, if we can get non-hams to stand up and say, "I want the protection of amateur radio in my neighborhood. You know, I want somebody to know what's going on if we get hit by a disaster, man-made or natural. You know, I want someone to be on the receiving end of emergency transmissions from the authorities, spreading information. I want that. And as you said, there are also other reasons why hands come in handy. You know, you just gave a personal reason with military training. There are quite a few people who, in the military who use hands to keep in touch with loved ones. And believe you me, I consider that part of the national defense, that service. I also want to mention that emergency communications, while the probably the single most important reason to have hands around, are not the only reason. I understand my friend Nick Leggett sent you a softball question for the air.
Actually, I have it right here. I was going to ask you that.
Okay. Well, he asked something like, we've got it in front of you, but something like, you know.
Should I read it to you?
No, why don't you, it's a short message.
Okay, Don's been doing a lot of promoting already of this, so I contacted him yesterday and arranged to do the show today, so he's already been busy, which is great because I haven't had the time. But one of his friends, Nick Leggett, who contacted me many, many moons ago and put me in touch with Don, sends the following question. Do inventors have the right to participate in the economy by experimenting with amateur radio antennas on their own homes? Don, take it away.
Okay. Well, my answer is yes. And, in fact, our proposal to the FCC says that there should be two requirements for getting an antenna waiver or, you know, exemption from the HOA regulations. You should either be able to certify that you're skilled, you have skills training in emergency communications, or that you are working on inventions. Hands have, over the decades, have come up with a number of technological innovations, but their rate of innovation has been going down over the years as there are fewer hands because there are fewer young people able to enter ham radio. So we would consider that an important contribution, particularly, you know, when we're in a global, the much-touted global economy, for better or worse, we need to be technologically competitive in America. And telling people that they can't play around with inventing better means of communication is really stupid. You know, I think, okay, let's just turn over the seal to China and Japan, why don't we?
As I told you, I'm the inaugural district governor for a new district in Virginia, District 29, for Toastmasters, and we just had our conference last Saturday. And our keynote, well, our communication and leadership awardee was a gentleman by the name of Anish Chopra, who happens to be the first IT fellow in the White House. And I sat down and had lunch with him and got an opportunity to talk to him. And one of the programs that he was talking about was how the internet and technology and all of that is opening things up and encouraging people to participate in building the economy, starting new companies, starting new businesses, participating. And so there seems to be a definite need for something along those lines, and I think this is something that might actually fit into that particular program if you've got someone within the ham radio community who can do something that's going to get everybody's attention, in essence.
Well, I would suggest, as a future possibility, that you bring Nick Leggett on your show just to discuss how HOAs are inhibiting inventions generally. He's under an HOA not too far from you in Reston, Virginia.
Oh, yes.
And he's also an inventor. He's got 3 patents, or maybe it's 4. I have trouble keeping up with him. But anyway, he's got various patents, and you know, he's annoyed because the HOA won't want to put up an antenna. He can't play with radio. He can't come up with a radio invention because he doesn't have an antenna. But he can also talk about other HOA regulations. You know, for example, he holds a patent for a hovercraft guidance mechanism. Don't ask me how it works. But anyway, it helps a a hovercraft to fly in a more level manner. And he can't work on it in his backyard because of the, well, he's in the apartment anyway, but if he already had a single family home, he couldn't work on it in his backyard because the HOAs, you know, tend to, you know, prohibit anything like that going on, anything mechanical going on in someone's properties. And yet you could, you know, you can look to the Jetsons and so on, and, you know, see that, you know, there are some cases where a hovercraft would come in handy, you know, including invasions, military uses. Iran has a hovercraft fleet. China has a hovercraft fleet, and that way they can go over the sea and then move right up onto the shore. They ride in a cushion of air rather than on the water or the land, so they can go right from land from sea to land or vice versa on the hovercraft. The U.S. doesn't have a hovercraft fleet. Maybe we should, you know. And anyway, that's somebody else's decision. But the point is, there's work that could be done on inventing better hovercraft, and Nick Leggett would be happy to do it, but his HOA won't let him.
Actually,
so I would suggest having him on. He's much more techno speak than I am, but he's still understandable. And I think he would provide a lot of food for thought to your listeners.
Well, you know, he's the first one who, because he wrote to me and initially and suggested that I look into this. I said, yeah, well, it's really not what I do. And he's the one who convinced me that what I really needed to do was to look at the big picture of ham antennas. And I've never met Nick, but all of this has been done via email over the years. And so that's a good idea. I will have to get Nick on, and we'll have to talk about it.
I can't promise you he'll say yes, for reasons that after 40 years of friendship I still can't quite fathom. He's a little shy about public appearances, but if you can get him, he would be wonderful.
Well, if he comes, he can come into the studio, and it'll just be the two of us in here. So there's no – it's just talking to me. It's not – you know, it's not really – public appearances at all. We don't have cameras. So it's just our voices. I'm not a camera person.
I'm not really either.
See, although, it works out this way.
I'll use any medium I can find to get the message out.
Well, we're happy to oblige here on the comments. Don, your email address is djslaw@gmail.com.
Yeah. At Gmail, yes, gmail.com.
Okay, D for Don, J for...
J is for Joseph, that's my middle name, and the S is for Shellhart, which I won't even try to spell.
It starts with an S, like my name.
Yes, well, I'll give it a whirl. S is in Sam, C-H-E-L-L-H-A-R-D-T. If someone wants to Google me on the Internet, I appear to be the only Don Shellhart in the entire world.
Okay. So, Don, they'll get...
Google my name, you will always see articles about me.
Okay. We will have that in the promo, and that will be available on my website. So for anybody who's listening in right now and would like to contact you and would like to sign your petition, and by the way, I will sign your petition...
Oh, thank you.
So feel free to add my name to the list.
Well, if there are any hams listening, we can certainly use you to get involved in this docket also. But so far, there's pretty good ham participation. What we desperately need is people who don't want to put an antenna up themselves to come out and say, I have no interest in becoming a ham, but I appreciate the emergency communications protection. I appreciate the contribution that hams can make to new technology, and I appreciate the fact that hams help me to keep in touch with my loved ones in the service.
That was a personal one. So, Don, guess what? We're out of time. We're out of time. How did you know that?
Oh, it didn't require too many smarts. I figured we'd been going an hour or so.
Here we have.
Well, this has been a real pleasure for me. I hope I've motivated some people to contact the FCC. And in addition to that, just keep talking this thing up. What we basically need to do is to get people outside the ham community talking to their legislators and their civic leaders about the benefits of ham radio.
Thanks, Don.
And, we also need people to understand that at least a lot of hams are not asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Thank you very much for joining us.
We'll bend to the aesthetic concerns. We'll bend to reasonable antenna height limits. But please don't keep us off the air, because you're making things worse for yourself if there's ever an emergency in your neighborhood.
Thank you, Don. We really do have to go.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.